You touch a key, and it's a completely hard freeze with the system.
Nice.
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 ding. We got a winner.
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off, then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust, except for us. Right. You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Now in the Computer Corner, here are the data doctors.
The clock on the wall says 12:08, which means it's time for another edition of the Computer Corner. Welcome back. If you've been listening over the last decade or so, we've been here for more than 10 years talking to you about computers, about technology, about the things that frustrate you in your life surrounding those devices or those technological things that are happening out there in the world. And we do it each and every Saturday from noon to 2 o'clock. So we're here for the next 2 hours to talk to you. We've got ways for you to participate in the show. We'll toss those out early and often. 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. That's the phone number you can dial. Of course, you can join us online at datadoctors.com/radio. Or if you're not slash inclined, just go to datadoctors.com. Click where it says radio show. And you'll be hooked up with the goods. And as always, we come each and every week with sort of a theme or a topic of discussion. Something to sort of get get things started. Sometimes it's things that are going on in the news, something that's new, something that's coming. Sometimes it's just we get lots of questions that people ask through various mechanisms, and when we see a number of people asking the same question over and over, we think, well, that might make a good radio show topic. And this week, we decided, you know, we haven't talked in a long time about Wi-Fi, about wireless networks, about things you can do to use your computers untethered, whether it's at the coffee shop, or at now the McDonald's down the street, whether it's at some of the more popular restaurants, whether it's in your own home, in your business, whether if it's for convenience because you want to be able to sit out by the pool and not have to have a wire strung out there, or it's because your house wasn't wired for networking, and rather than have to put wires in, you're trying to avoid that, and so you go wireless. There's lots of reasons why you might go that route, and many, many, many people have wireless networks now in their homes. And a few years ago, I think it was statistics showed that less than 20% of folks out there had their wireless network secured in their homes. Today, I'd imagine that statistics probably flip-flopped, where probably more than half the people out there have now secured it. They've figured out that just having the thing set up and plugged in, while that may be convenient and easy, that does allow people to come and sort of jump in, get online, use your internet connection, do things from it as if they were you, maybe even take information from your computers. And so I think people have gotten an education. But today's talking about some of the things beyond just security when it comes to wireless. There are lots and lots of different types of wireless networks out there. And you may not know that some of the things that you may be living with, some of the frustrations, some of the pains, some of them can be solved and avoided by simply changing a piece of equipment, changing its position, changing some of the things you do. And if you're thinking about putting a wireless network in your home for convenience or to add additional PCs, whatever the case might be, then we'll talk about what currently is sort of the best standard and what balance is between price and effectiveness, because there's lots of choices out there. And if you're going to go shopping, besides just the different brands, you're going to see all kinds of different letters behind the wireless standards. And everything started with something called 802.11. But after that, there becomes an alphabet soup, if you will, of choices. And we're going to talk today about those choices, what really is sort of in the past that you're not going to find, but more importantly, what you're going to find when you're out there faced trying to make a decision and what's the best for your particular kind of situation. We've got lines for you to call in. We got one left open at 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. If you've been a listener to the show in the past, you know that those lines do book up quickly. And so you might want to take advantage of that early on in the show. Again, online we have resources posted for you about the latest and greatest in Wi-Fi. And they are posted at datadoctors.com/radio. Also, while you're there, you can look on the right-hand side. There's a feedback box that has links for you to ask a question, make a suggestion, or jump in and jump into the fray with our blog online there. Those questions, suggestions come to us right here in the studio, and we do look over those and talk about some of those things as the show progresses. So we do take a look at those, and I've actually got that open here, and there's a couple of interesting ones in there that we'll talk about in just a few minutes. Somebody who possibly is in that former camp with an unsecured wireless network, and we're going to talk about ways you can secure that, whether your question is about wireless networks or the sort of portability of networks or not. You're more than welcome to give us a call, because we can talk to you about, summer's coming, and maybe you're thinking about, you know, before back to school time comes, maybe it's time now to get a jump on the new technology, and so you're looking for advice on what to purchase or what to avoid. Or is it time yet for Windows Vista? You know, it's been out for, seems like forever now. And maybe it's time, maybe it's not. I don't know. The world doesn't seem to be rushing out to go and buy the what we used to call the latest operating system, but now it's been out for a while. And people are saying that maybe this is going to be an operating system that's sort of skipped over as people sort of wait for the next big thing. So we could talk about that. We can talk about the service pack that wasn't Microsoft was set to release its latest service pack for Windows XP, Service Pack 3. As some of you may know, service packs are basically big roll-up packages of all kinds of security updates, bug fixes, patches, things like that. And that was set to be released last week, or this past week. And they halted things at the last minute, actually the day of. They put all the brakes on everything, and they stopped the release because of a few major problems with a few pieces of software. And we can talk about whether or not you ought to be upgrading the minute that's available. So we'll talk about all those things. Of course, your calls and questions, 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. I think maybe we'll try to jump in on the phones quick and early before we jump into the topic, because we have the barnacle of the great ship Computer Corner. He's done it again. He's made it onto the phones and was the first guy in. So it's Lewis.
I sure appreciate it. Yeah, I'm calling from Galveston, Texas.
Galveston, Texas. Do they have kite surfing in Galveston?
Yep. And I've got the places located. And when I get off the phone and after the show, I'm going to go out. I spent 4 days in Corpus Christi and kited all 4 days. And that was after a month in South Padre Island, Texas. So it's been kind of cool.
So those people who don't listen or haven't listened for a long time, Lewis calls from time to time. He checks in from around the planet. He doesn't. Most people have a job or have family or have some responsibilities, but Lewis doesn't. He just cruises around and finds places. He finds places that are windy, right? You find places that are windy, and then you jump on some kind of surfboard type apparatus hooked to some kind of huge kite that pulls you around, and you play around in the water all day.
Yep, it's like a wakeboard and a big kite up in the air, and away we go and have fun.
So now that you've made everybody mad already, so
yep.
You also then are somewhat of a technology nut. We might even call you a nerd, right?
Yeah.
And so you call up I can only wonder what your question might be this week.
Well, briefly, my GUI is gone.
Your who?
My GUI's gone.
Your goo is gone?
GUI.
GUI.
Graphical user interface. I turn on my computer and I get a blue screen. I can go into the task manager and open programs, but my menus seem to be kind of oddball. I can't go into safe. I can go into safe mode, but I can't get the debug feature working and so forth. And if I do a systems restore, is that likely to fix that or likely to cause more problems?
It's likely to be a good gamble that it could do either or none. So tell you what, Lewis, I'm going to take you, put you back where I found you, which is on hold for just a quick second. We're going to get a quick check of traffic and weather, and for that is John Dormy in the KTR Traffic Center. He's going to tell you what's happening with the latest on the roadways. John? Looking for tips, tricks, and things to embrace or avoid? Sign up for our weekly newsletter. Gosh, I can't talk today. DataDoctors.com. You look for the box to put in your email address. Hit the subscribe button, and you are in. In like Flynn. No spam, no advertisements, no garbage. just good quality stuff for more than a decade from your friendly guys over at Data Doctors. One of this week's highlights, the tip of the week, make your own keystroke shortcuts. Did you know that you can take just about anything in Windows and you can turn it into something that's accessible via your own shortcut? Everybody knows about some of the more common things you can do, like Control-C for copy and Control-V for paste. But you can take just about anything and turn it into something shortcuttable. You do it by right-clicking on the icon. For example, on your desktop, if you had an icon for, your favorite program, you would just right-click on that thing, go down to Properties, and in there is a place to set up a keyboard shortcut. You click on the shortcut key field and press the keystroke combination you want to create, and it'll only let you assign things that aren't already taken up, so it prevents you from making duplicates. You click OK, and then from then on, that key combination that you made, like Control and the letter, Control Shift and Q, for example, would open QuickBooks if that's what you assigned. So you can set those things up if you want the step-by-step instructions. All you need to do is subscribe to our newsletter. Again, you can do it at datadoctors.com. Look for the place to put in your email address. You can also, if you click there, you can get a preview of not only this newsletter, but the last 19 of them, in addition to this one, and check those things out. We were talking to Lewis before we went to the break, and he's got missing GUI. And for those not as inclined, GUI, Lewis correctly identified as the graphical user interface, a.k.a. Windows, the thing you see when computer starts up. You're stuck at sort of a blue screen. You said you can go into safe mode, and things work okay, correct?
Well, things don't work really quite okay in safe mode, because when I try to go for the debug, I don't get the line-by-line loading. The task manager, I'm only getting 35 tasks. I should have about 45, and one of those tasks should be the Explore EXE.
Well, when you go into safe mode, understand that that's a minimalistic kind of view of the Windows world. So it tries to shut down and not load anything that isn't vitally important to the basic foundation of Windows loading. So if you can get into safe mode at all and are displayed with the GUI, the graphical user interface, then that's sort of starting to tell us that there's a good indication that something is wrong and damaged, either from a driver sort of standpoint, meaning you've got a bad driver, a wrong driver, corrupted driver, something like that.
I'm not getting the GUI in that situation.
Oh, you're not either. Okay. So
no,
then more
desktop.
Then you're stuck with it. There could be a hardware problem, there could be a software problem. The first thing I would try to do is eliminate some of the more basic hardware issues, and I do that by opening up the case, make sure all the fans are spinning and whirring, there's not all kinds of dust blocking
it's
them.
Laptop.
It's a laptop?
Yep.
Okay.
I hate to tear that out at you, but it is.
Yeah, no problem. Most laptops still have fans in them, so I'd want to make sure that fan was functional and spinning and blowing air out of whatever ports that air might come out of. The fans don't always stay on with laptops, so sometimes they need to warm up a little bit before they do. The other thing, then, I'd want to listen real carefully to make sure there's no ticking or clicking or sounds that are unusual that you didn't hear when things were working fine.
Once
we've sort of eliminated those things, then we'd look at, have we added anything to this machine recently? Like, have we changed the hard drive? Have we added any external devices? Have we put more RAM in? Any of these kinds of things you'd want to obviously undo and reverse to see if the problem goes away. After those things, assuming you have a good backup, then the last part of what you can really do is you can attempt to try to repair Windows, and this gets a lot more technical, but basically you stick in your original operating system disks, and if it's something that was built by a major manufacturer, they're going to come with what's called recovery or restore disks.
Which is about 2,000 miles away in Phoenix.
Yeah, so I'm talking for the masses, not Lewis who prances around and...
And I'll shut up if you want me to, otherwise I'll give you feedback along the way.
Okay. Probably make it easier for people listening, but that's up to you. So, assuming that you had said disks, you could put those in. I'll be very honest and careful with my words. Putting those recovery or restore disks in generally will cause all of your data, your settings, the things that you probably find near and dear to your heart, it will cause those things to be gone. And so make sure long before you do that, that A, you have things backed up that you care about, and B, that you understand what the outcome is going to be by putting that disk in. It's possible that's going to solve your problem. It's also possible it's going to do nothing for you if your problem is not sort of operating system related. So kind of like on Mark's show, he talks about early on, you've got to decide if this is fuel or spark. In our world, we've got to figure out if this is a hardware or software problem, and So I try to eliminate as many of the major quick and easy hardware things as possible first, and then move into sort of the operating system world, and then from there you got to do some more advanced troubleshooting if you're not getting results.
Checklist shows the hard drive is A-okay with no bad sectors if it matters.
Well, that's all good. I mean, the more things you can sort of cross off the list, the better. So you've got some troubleshooting to do there. There's a couple of ideas. If you don't have things backed up, get them backed up before you make any major steps. And you can try System Restore and or some of the other repair functions that may work out for you. It's the Data Doctors. You're listening to the Computer Corner. We got to take a quick time out here, pay some bills. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're talking about Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi standing for wireless fidelity, a.k.a. wireless networking, wireless networks. The pros, the cons, the things good, the things bad, the new, the bad, the old, the good, the ugly. Whatever it is surrounding wireless networks will be your pseudo-authorities, if you will. The latest Wi-Fi standards out there that you'll be seeing if you go shopping or look will be pretty much 802.11n as in Nancy. That's sort of the latest and greatest, combining the speed of some of the faster previous standards. In fact, it looks like speeds may top out somewhere near 100 megabits, which is about where normal sort of fast networks today that are wired are. It also has better range than its predecessors in a lot of cases, and is a little bit less crowded from a frequency standpoint. So it's sort of the best of all worlds. It's a few bucks more than its second cousin, twice removed, 802.11g. But there are some benefits, and probably if I was out buying a wireless router and network device of some sort today, that's probably where I'd look to buy, is that 802.11n standard. So just a generic, if you're going out shopping, probably what you should consider. We've got resources posted for you at our website, datadoctors.com/radio, including a review of six more popular of the 802.11n routers that are out there on the shelves right now. You can see some of the pros and cons. What are the more expensive ones? What are the less expensive ones? What do they do for you? That kind of thing. Also, all kinds of other links to things in the wireless world, including also a link to Powerline adapters. Powerline's sort of an alternative when it comes to the world of networking. When you don't have a network jack in a room and wireless isn't working or isn't reliable or there's a security issue that you're worried about, then there's these devices you can get. You basically, the premise of these things is that you plug them into, you get two of them at least, right? You get a pair. One goes near where your router is. It plugs into the wall into a regular power outlet, and it has a jack on the bottom that you plug your wired network cable from into your router. So now it's sort of, in a way, taken all the power lines all of your house and taken your wired network and thrown it on your power lines. Now you go into your faraway bedroom, office, closet, den, garage, whatever the case might be, on the same power breaker, right? Not same breaker, excuse me, in the same household, basically. Unless your household has a sub panel and things, which most houses that are normal size don't. You go anywhere else in the house, you plug in another one of these devices, and voila, you can plug right into it. There's no drivers to load, there's no programming, there's nothing special. You just plug right in, and things work, and things go. I have a few of these in my house, specifically for use with a TiVo that I have upstairs, and it's not near a place where I had a network jack that was convenient. And the wireless thing is sort of, in my house, I have a couple areas that it doesn't work so well, so I stuck this thing up there, plugged it in, and it's been that way for going on 2 years now, and I think I've never done anything with it other than plug it in. So they work, and they work well. They're not as fast from a speed standpoint, but when you're trying to just do basic things on the internet, in my case, the TiVo just needs to go get its daily updates and stuff, not a big deal. They work perfectly, and they work really well. So anyway, that's another alternative out there. We've got some more things that we'll talk about and some interesting newsletter items. And we've got some emails that are coming in from the website in the feedback section. We'll talk about all those in a few minutes. But first, let's jump on the phones and see if we can help a few folks out, starting next with Evelyn. Evelyn, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Hi.
Hi, how can we help you?
Okay. I just purchased a new scanner, and it's a scanner in addition to two others that I have. Now, every time I use this, the new one, which is a document scanner, my flatbed will not work unless I completely shut down and reboot.
Okay. Are these scanners, do they both plug in through USB?
Yes.
Okay. So you've got your document scanner and your flatbed scanner. When you
I also have a negative scanner, so I got three scanners hooked up.
So let me just ask, I mean, this is sort of getting me curious. What are you doing with all these scanners?
Well, the flatbed is for pictures, the negative one is to scan pictures, and the document's to scan documents. It's much faster than the others.
Gotcha. So
I do a lot of Photoshop work, too.
With the document one, are you talking about something that has an automatic document feeder? You can load stuff in, and it just kind of rolls through them all, or as opposed to the flatbed, which you have to stick things in one by one?
Yeah, the document one, it's very fast.
Because I know there are people listening thinking the same thing I'm thinking, which is, you know, you can buy decent scanners that have attachments that let you do slide scanning and flatbed picture scanning, and they have automatic document feeders that can be added so that you can take one scanner and do all three things. And
I know that, but my flatbed is a high-end tabloid size.
All right.
You know, it's like a $6,000 scanner, so...
$6,000 scanner? I'm thinking $50 down at Office Max. All right, we're talking something different. Okay, so there's obviously some kind of incompatibility, and I'm going to guess it's from a software standpoint with your various types of devices here that are all scanner devices. The first thing I would try to do is check with the manufacturers of the various devices, and you can check at their websites first, or if it's in the case of this specialty scanner, you might have to call them depending on the case. I've not heard of that company, but I'm sure in the high-end scanner world that they're probably very well known. But you can check to see if they have newer drivers available for your operating system.
Okay.
So that would be the first place I'd want to check. If they have anything that's newer than what you're currently using, for example, you're using version 3.2 and they have version 4.1 now available, you probably would want to go and grab that and update and jump through whatever the hoops are to make that happen.
Okay, I know how to do that. Okay.
So once we've gotten those things done, oftentimes what these different updated drivers, what that's all about is really when they find problems with incompatibilities or with issues that might help relieve some bottlenecks and increase speed or accuracy or quality or any of those kinds of things, they create these updates and they publish them, and that's really what those things are all about. So by getting the latest, you'll have the latest and greatest that avoids as many of the issues that are known out there as possible, possibly taking care of your problem. Now, if not, then the next thing to try would be, are any of these things hooked up to what's called a USB hub, or are they plugged in directly?
No hubs
or yes?
They are hooked up into hubs, yeah.
Okay.
And not different hubs. I've got like three hubs.
Are the hubs powered or not powered or a mix and match of all?
They're a mix and match. I've got one that's powered and then the other ones are like daisy chained to it.
Okay, so even though the USB spec says that you can do all this daisy chaining and mixing and matching of all these things, in my experience, that oftentimes is the cause of lots of little weird problems. So you also might experiment with where things are plugged in and in what order to see if you can get different results. I would try to, any place you can avoid or remove a hub, do it, and opt for powered hubs over non-powered hubs, meaning ones that you have to supply power to versus ones that take their power from the USB sort of channel or chain or from the computer.
Uh-huh.
So you might look at that and just experiment a little bit with where things are plugged into, and you might have amazingly different results.
Okay, I hadn't thought of that. And all of those hubs that are daisy-chained do have their own power, but since it said I could daisy-chain them, I did. Because I don't have that many outlets, every outlet in my room already has two... I can't think of what the heck they're called.
Well, we're not talking about the power side of things as far as daisy chaining. We're talking about really when you come out of the back of the computer, there's a USB cable that's going into a device or into a hub. If you've got three hubs, let's say, ideally you eliminate as many of those as possible. But if you have to have three because of the number of devices you have, each one has its own connection directly to the PC and not to another hub.
I don't have that many things in my PC, that many USB hookups. I've only got six.
Okay, but how many hubs do you have?
I have three hubs, but I've got, like, you know, 15 devices. I've got four scanners. I've got five printers. I've got...
Oh, my gosh.
Bunch of external hard drives.
You're out of control. Okay,
out of control, yes.
Yeah, so at the very least, try to take each hub, at least, and make sure it's plugged in directly. So you might have to rearrange some things to do that. But what's really, really not good is if one hub plugs into another hub that then plugs into the PC. That sort of chaining of hubs, even though technically you're supposed to be able to do that, and it sort of kind of works.
Okay.
That's sort of the worst of what you could do that would potentially cause these kinds of problems.
I'm sure I have some of that going. So what I need to do is get my hubs hooked directly into the PC.
That's the first step. And if they're not all powered, then replace them with powered ones and eliminate as many sort of jumps, if you will, as possible. So the fewest number of times cables have to be plugged in before they get from the device to the PC, the better.
Okay.
So that includes if you have extensions, like USB extension cables, eliminating those and opting for longer USB cables in their place is always better. You know, all these kinds of things all contribute to the issues and the potential for issues that you're probably experiencing.
Okay. Yeah, I know I don't have any extensions. I know that that's not the best way to go, so yeah. I always do buy a longer cable if I need it.
Now, make sure you don't go too long because there's a limitation as to how long things are allowed to be. Okay, sometimes cable manufacturers sort of ignore that because it sort of does kind of work, kind of. But, make sure you don't go over. I think it's 10 feet is the maximum, so...
Yeah, I think one of my devices actually says no longer than 9 feet, so...
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have a few things to try, so I'll try those and see if that works for me.
Cable management, the key to all your world. And also check out to see, if there's any driver updates for those things.
Yes. Yep. Okay, well, thank you very much for taking my call.
Good luck, and I think you win at least the record on our show for the most number of things plugged into a PC, I'm sure, but...
Yeah, my hard drive, all my drives go all the way up to K drive.
Oh, wow. You're,
yeah,
you are an alphabet soup in and of yourself, so.
I'm sick. Okay.
Good luck, Evelyn.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Did you, she said four scanners and five printers and external hard drives galore, and oh my gosh. People listening are going, oh, why would you have four printers? Well, it sounds like she's really into various things with photography, and so probably... One's a photo printer and one's a... Who even knows? I don't know, but that's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of stuff. Speaking of a lot of stuff, there's a lot of cars causing a lot of congestion and a lot of problems on a lot of freeways, and that's where John Dorme in the KTR Traffic Center comes in to tell you about a lot of traffic. We talked about some of the cool tips and tricks and information in this week's newsletter and each week's newsletter, to which you can subscribe, datadoctors.com. Look for the place to put in your email address. Hit the subscribe button. But we've got some news items, 18 features Windows should have but doesn't. And it goes further to talk about how you can get some of those features turned on, enabled, or otherwise enacted right now. Cool things about how to... sort of dig into what are the error messages that you're giving. How do you sort of grab a hold of those and research them? Should you download Windows XP Service Pack 3 right away as soon as it becomes available? 10 reasons for business IT failure. All kinds of stuff, including a preview of this show, our Geek Speak of the Week, Headwhack of the Week, all that stuff to your inbox each and every week, absolutely free. Again, you can subscribe anytime online, datadoctors.com/radio, and just look for the box to put in your email address. It's as easy as that. Makes life simple and good for you. We've been talking a little bit about wireless networks, Wi-Fi specifically, and there's an interesting link resource at our site in the radio show section that talks about some of the sort of benefits of 802.11n. N as in Nancy. It's the latest and greatest from the world of Wi-Fi. And it's really the speeds of wireless networks are starting to approach that of what we have for wired networks in most homes and businesses. And security features are up, range is up, speed is up, prices are down. You can starting somewhere around $60-$70 for the real basic kind of low end 802.11n routers. on up to, gosh, you could spend a couple $100 if you want to get all the latest, greatest kind of features and functions, including the ability to plug in wired devices at gigabit speeds and plug in external hard drives and share those and all kinds of things. So there's lots of good resources posted there for you to help you make a decision if now is the time to upgrade or if you're looking at buying for the first time, sort of how to steer the course that's out there when it comes to wireless networks. Again, if you're going shopping today, you probably want to look at 802.11n. And when you're in the stores, that probably is going to be the product that's out there dominating the most. There still may be some good deals, quote-unquote, on older technologies, but keep in mind that those older technologies are about a quarter of the speed at best, have less range, and are really sort of yesterday's equipment. So I would think that you would serve yourself well to spend a few bucks more on sort of the latest, greatest stuff. It's really not that much more expensive, but there's a lot of benefit, and you know how fast this stuff changes. In a year or two, a lot of the things that you try to do may require that faster speed or that higher end security, that additional range. And so you probably do yourself a big favor to skip the good deal on the closeout stuff. Anyway, let's jump back in on the phones and see if we can help more people out. We've got Jim up next on the Computer Corner. Jim, thanks for holding. How can I help?
Hey, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Well, I'm a long-time talker and long-time answerer, so I'm glad you called. What can I help you with, sir?
Yes, my son, who is a computer guru, recently bought his dad a HP Pavilion PC Entertainment laptop.
Okay.
And he got it all hooked up and everything, but even the guru himself is baffled because when we go through the normal procedures of shutting it down, the screen, of course, goes black and the keyboard goes black, and lo and behold, 2 minutes later, it all comes back on.
So it's rebooting rather than shutting down when you tell it to shut down.
Exactly.
Has it done this from the day you took it out of the box, or it started happening after you did something?
Nope, first day out of the box.
Okay, so my first thought, did this machine, Windows XP, Windows Vista?
Windows Vista.
And did it come with Vista, or did you upgrade it to Vista?
He had it all programmed already.
Okay, but if it's a major manufacturer, you said it was HP. On the
right.
Front of the laptop, usually when you open the thing up, there will be a sticker there that says designed for, and then fill in the blanks, either Windows XP or Windows Vista or something along those lines.
Windows Vista.
Okay, so it was made for Vista, designed for Vista, and it, in fact, has Vista on it.
Right.
That's good, because what happens sometimes is people, they'll buy sort of a closeout model of something because they get a good deal, and it was designed for Windows XP, but they decide to load Vista on it, and although it sort of kind of works, there are some issues that occur, and that's a fairly frequent thing we see. The first thing I would try is to make sure that you have all the latest driver updates, patches, things of that nature. If this was happening from day one when you opened the box, if it was me, I would put it on the manufacturer to solve this problem. If it's something that happened after the fact, then, I'd start looking at, well, what did I install, what did I load, what's incompatible, those kinds of things. But really, if it's never shut down properly...
Exactly right, yeah.
Then I'd jump on the phone and make the guys over at HP, who are pretty much obligated to solve this problem, solve the problem for you.
And I hate doing the, shutting it off, and then when it comes back on, it goes through this, that you
Hey, sorry to cut you off there. I'm going to talk to you off the air. When we come back, we'll have more of your calls and questions.
You touch a key, and it just completely hard freezes the system.
Nice!
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 ding. We got a winner.
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off, then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust.
Except for us.
Right. You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Now in the Computer Corner, here are the Data Doctors.
Welcome back to the Computer Corner, another full hour of techno babble, or at least talk about technology, talk about things in your world that might help you. It might help you navigate the uncharted waters of technology and computers. We've been here for over a decade, and today we've been here for over an hour, which counts for something. And we've got lines open for you, 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. We've always got lines open online at datadoctors.com/radio, and we've got links posted for you. We've got places for you to ask questions and make suggestions, just like Marianne, who said, she's asked this through the Ask a Question link through the radio section of the website. She said, can someone sit in front of my house with a wireless computer, and if I'm online, access and take whatever data they choose? I have a firewall and virus protection installed. And so I'm assuming she means through wireless. Can somebody sit there? And part of what people don't understand is they think, because she asks, if I'm online, meaning if I'm on the internet. And so her thinking in her head is that this is only something that would be possible while she's doing something with her computer being online. And that's not the case. Yes, Marianne, if your network is not secured, then anyone can sit out in your driveway, or your neighbors don't have to be in your driveway. They can be in their house next door. They can hook up to your wireless network, and they potentially have access to the files and folders and information on your computer. They certainly have access to your internet connection. And even though you have a firewall and virus protection installed, that may or may not come into play, because they would be seen as something, a part of your regular sort of internal network. And many of internal network and many firewalls don't look at things that are part of your internal network as potential threats. And so there's not great protection against those things in some cases. So if you do not have your wireless network secured, it's imperative that you get that secured as soon as possible. That's the only way to prevent exactly what you're worried about happening from happening. Also, again, don't be confused. Just because you don't have your web browser open and you're not online, quote unquote, if you have a always-on internet connection, and those are pretty much what most people have today if they have broadband, whether that's from Cox or from Quest or from whoever it is, you're always connected to the internet. In almost every case, if you have a wireless network that's not secured, that means anybody is always connected to your network anytime they want, and it's not a good position for you to be in. So you definitely want to get that secured. You want to get that addressed as soon as possible. That's not a good position to be in. Certainly, someone can get access to files on your computer and do all kinds of things that are not savory. So make sure you get that addressed and get it addressed soon. Hopefully, Marianne's listening. If you don't have your network secured, you want to work on getting it secured, and you can give us a call with how to best go about that or any other question that you might have, 602-277-5827. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the wireless world that's out there. We talked a little bit about Powerline, which is sort of an alternative when wireless isn't working. But if in the past you've had problems with a wireless network in your home, some of the newer technologies out there may help solve some of those problems. Specifically, we've talked a little bit about the 802.11 N series, and as a Nancy, it's just the latest in the list of the alphabet that comes to us. That's sort of consumer grade electronics for being able to put a wireless network in our homes or in our business. These devices have quite a bit better range, quite a bit stronger signals, and more speed, and of course incorporate the latest in wireless security standards and trends. And so there's quite a bit that's potentially can be gained there. And so if you had problems in the past, you may not have problems with some of the newer technology that's out there today. So you can give those things a shot. Also, the power line adapters, basically allowing you to use the home wires, the power lines that are already in your home, as potential ways to extend your network and get other machines sort of on the network and online. People oftentimes use those not only for computers but for other devices. I talked about I have a DVR, a TiVo, that I use one of those with. I also have somewhere else in the house an Xbox 360 that plugs in to be able to get its updates and get game updates and things like that off the web. And those things are easy to plug in and set up when you have regular wired connections, not always as easy through wireless connections. And so the power line adapters oftentimes make life a lot easier when it comes to those things as well, because they don't require any drivers. They don't require any special setup. You just plug them in and you use them. We've got all kinds of links, resources, and information posted online, datadoctors.com/radio, and you can check those things out at your leisure. Of course, we record each and every show, and we post those up, and there's previous shows going back for, gosh, at least 3, 4, 5 years. You can listen to them in their entirety. You can see the resources and links and sort of interact that way. So with that, let's jump back on the phones and see if we can help some other additional people out. Up next, I think it is, he's on the line right now trying to get information from Vincent. I was going to take Vincent, and then I realized he's already doing that. Geek Speak of the Week? Yeah, you're right. See, Pete reminded me. Each and every week, we bring you words, terminology, vernacular from the language of geek. We call it our Geek Speak of the Week. You might just call it silly. But either way, it's something that helps you understand what the folks out there are talking about when they're trying to talk down to you or down at you about technology terminology. This week's Geek Speak of the Week is Ad Hoc Network. Ad Hoc. It's spelled A-D-H-O-C. Sounds kind of strange. It's a generic form of networking, meaning temporary or spontaneous. It's devices that allow you to connect through sort of the Wi-Fi world. So when you see an ad hoc connection, if you've ever been in an airport or someplace looking for a wireless network, you may see what look like regular networks out there, and they're generally identified by like something that looks like a little antenna versus a what looks like a little laptop computer open. And an ad hoc connection is if Pete and I wanted to set up our own little wireless network between our two laptops, and there wasn't an access point for us to both hook up to, but we wanted to connect to each other, we could create an ad hoc network on the fly where he opens up his laptop and sets it up in ad hoc mode. I open up mine and do the same. And without any other devices in between us, we can communicate directly with each other. Thus, the ad hoc network is built and created. These things can often be a trap, though. If you're in a public place like an airport, you might see something that says free Wi-Fi. And if you're not paying attention, you won't notice that it says it's an ad hoc network, and it could be somebody's computer sitting waiting for unsuspecting people to connect to it or attempt to connect to it. And when they do, viruses are planted or information is gathered from your PC. So beware of that. Next time you're looking for a wireless connection, be very careful about what you connect to. You shouldn't be connecting to ad hoc networks in public places, because those are almost always an indication of something not good. So ad hoc network. You can see more information about that and read up on the explanation at our website, datadoctors.com/radio. I think we're going to take a quick check of traffic and weather. For that, John Dorming, the KTR Traffic Center. He has the latest, John. Capturing error messages. That's this week's Head Whack of the Week. What was that error message? Whenever you get an error message on your PC, oftentimes it doesn't mean a whole lot to you, but to the person you're going to ask to help you, it means the world. So if you want a quick, simple way to capture it that doesn't require you to write down all the zeros and slashes and weird details, reach over for that seldom-used key on your keyboard. It says print screen on it. You've hit it before and you've gone, well, nothing's coming out of my printer. Well, that's not exactly what it's for. That print screen button, if you tap it next time you get an error message, it captures whatever's on your screen into that little invisible Windows clipboard. And it's just waiting for you to do something with it. And that something is to open up Word or WordPad or Paint or some tool that's already installed. I like WordPad because every computer these days has it already installed. And you can just open that program up and then you do edit and paste or control V if you want to do a keyboard shortcut. And that'll just drop whatever was in that invisible clipboard, a.k.a. the screen that you just printed, onto that page. And then you can type some notes about how you made it occur. Like, every time I do X, Y, and Z, then this is the error that pops up. And you've now documented exactly how you produce it and what it is as far as an error. And if you save that file and email it on to whoever's helping you or print it or whatever you want to do at that point, you've just captured some of the most important stuff when it comes to whoever's going to be helping you with your technology solve the problem. So print screen, that print screen button, keep in mind that what it's really doing in the background is capturing that to that invisible clipboard. If you want to capture just the active window, meaning just that dialog box that popped up, make sure it's clicked and selected so it's the active content. Hold down the Alt key when you hit the print screen, and it'll capture just that box to allow you to paste, making your screen size or the object that you're pasting a little bit smaller, if that helps you. So print screen is your friend. Now you know what it does, and now you know how you can use it. Let's jump back to the phone, see if we can help out Richard, who's been holding for a bit. Richard, welcome to the Computer Corner. How can I help you?
I have Windows Vista operating system, the Ultimate, and I'm trying to get BitLocker drive encryption to work.
Okay. What? Tell me at the end of the day what it is you're trying to accomplish, sort of in plain English.
I'm trying to encrypt the drive so it's not accessible by others without the password.
Okay. So just so that you understand and everybody listening understands, what this drive encryption technology was built for was mostly for the mobile world and mostly for the mobile world of corporate workers who, let's say I'm the IT manager for a big corporation and we've got 200 people that carry laptops out in the field and those laptops contain data on them, much of which is proprietary, confidential, what have you, for our company. We want to make sure that if those laptops are lost or stolen, which that happens, that the data, the contents of those laptops can't be read, because most people know that if that drive, you know, even though there might be a username and a password, if that drive is removed and put on any other computer, the data can just be read real easily. And so these encryption technologies were designed to help secure the data should there be a loss of a laptop or a hard drive stolen or something of that nature. So with that in mind, is that what you understood it to do and that's what you're trying to accomplish?
Yes, I'm encrypting both my laptop and my desktop.
Okay, so a couple of things you want to keep in mind before you go down this path, because I've seen people do it, get everything encrypted, get everything set, and then 6 months from now they're saying, hey, I forgot my little encryption key and there's something wrong with my drive, and they end up causing themselves a lot more damage than they intended to. And so it's real important that when you start to go down this path, you recognize the benefits of doing it, but also the dangers of doing it. And there is sort of a dark side when it comes to this kind of stuff, because you may prevent yourself from being able to get at your own data at some point in the future if you're not careful about what you do.
Right. We're using USB drives to contain the password, plus we have paper backup for it.
Okay. So if you've got the correct version of Vista, and Vista Ultimate does contain the correct stuff to make this happen, there are a couple of prerequisites. One is that the drive be formatted with what's called NTFS file system, and it's nothing terribly exotic or new, but there are two different possibilities when it comes to Windows Vista of how things can be formatted. I'm going to assume that that's already in place, but it's a quick thing to check, and you can do so by double-clicking on My Computer or opening the computer section. And if you just right-click on the drive where the contents are that you're trying to encrypt, go down to Properties, it should bring up a little sort of menu of things, and it'll show you what the drive format is. It'll either be FAT or NTFS. If it's not NTFS, then there's our issue to start with. We've got to get that converted. That's a fairly simple process. But I'm going to assume that's...
It is NTFS.
Okay, so...
But hold on. It's a RAID 0 drive. And it seems like, from what I can see on the net, that RAID drives have a problem with BitLocker.
Yes. There are some known issues, and you're at sort of the far end of the technical spectrum of what most people are trying to do. Tell you what I'm going to do for you, Richard. I'm going to take you, pop you back on hold here, see if I can give you a little help off the air, because it's going to be a very specific issue that will apply to you and four other people on the planet. So if you're trying to do... Needless to say, if you're trying to do encryption on a machine and it has all kinds of extra hardware things, that may be a problem for you. Stay tuned. Half hour more Computer Corner when we come back from this quick news break. Stick around. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. About a half an hour of show left, so plenty of time. If you've had trouble getting through on the phone lines, we've got a couple of lines open right now for you. 602-277-KTAR. It's 277-5827. That's the data doctor's hotline. That'll get you right through to Mario. He'll talk to you for a bit, make sure he understands what your issue is. And then he has this vast call screening computer where he can type in your name. Well, it's not your complete name. It's just the first 8 characters of your name that I can see. And I get the first 5 characters of the city you're in, and then I get about the first 5 or 6 words of what your issue is. You would think that with all the cool technology in the world that we'd have something to give us a little bit better heads up. But that's all right. We take them a little bit half blind. We know sort of what your issue is. And the challenge is always, can we talk intelligently about the topic or subject enough so that we can help solve your problem? So We're going to try to do just that with Steve in Scottsdale. Steve, welcome to the Computer Corner. Whoa.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your help. I've had a situation where my compact desktop will just shut down and restart itself. And it will happen 6 or 7 times in one day, and then it won't happen again for a week. And usually a dialog box will pop up and say, system has recovered from a critical error. Report this to Microsoft or, you know, disregard. And I can just disregard it. It'll restart again. But I don't. I've searched through everything I could find, deleted old files, and made sure nothing's on there running that I don't want running. And I just don't know what's causing that.
So in the middle of you working, it'll just spontaneously just restart?
Yes.
So those kinds of things are almost always hardware related, and oftentimes are heat related, meaning something inside the PC has stopped functioning. And oftentimes what we'll do in the shop is we'll open up the case and leave the thing powered on, and we'll find that one or more of the fans inside that are supposed to be spinning isn't, or it's spinning at a tenth of the speed it ought to be spinning at. We'll find all kinds of dust clogging up some of the heat sinks, and those are like the little fins of metal that stick up off of various processors and other components inside the machine. We'll find sometimes on the main board, the motherboard, some people call it, there's little devices called capacitors that those things are damaged in some way, shape, or form. But generally speaking, it's a hardware issue and oftentimes heat-related. And so those are the places that I would start to look at to troubleshoot this kind of thing. What you may notice is on the days that it's happening 5 or 6 times a day, those are the days that you're pushing the PC the hardest, meaning you've got the most programs open, or you've got programs that are particularly processor-intensive open. So programs like graphics editing, any kind of things that take a lot of processing power, things that have to do a lot of math, anything of that nature, games, things like that, those tend to work your processor harder. And if you've got heat-related problems, they heat up your computer faster than anything, thus causing these crazy reboot cycles to occur. So somebody, and I would start, but you know, unless you're not real handy with just real basic stuff, just grab a screwdriver, take the cover off the side, then power it on, and look around inside there with the machine powered on, and see that all the fans are spinning properly, and you have to look around. There may be as many as 3 or 4 or 5 different fans inside there, and to make sure that it's not full of all kinds of dust and dirt. And a lot of people sort of think, well, you know, if it's not clean inside, it's not a big deal. It's just the inside of a computer. But I can tell you that as those little heat sinks get clogged up with various dust and debris and things, they retain heat, and heat is electronics' worst enemy. So,
okay. Well, thank you. It is in a rather dusty, warm room, so I think you're onto something there. So.
We live in Arizona, so we all are in a dusty, warm world. And, right. and you know, the carpet is an amazing thing that creates tons of lint, and computers are like little vacuum cleaners. They generally have little holes in the front where air is sort of sucked in and blown out the back. And that means air is constantly being pulled through, and if machines, most computers sit down on the floor or near them, they just take all that stuff that's floating around down low with the carpet fibers and all that, and they suck it in, and you'd be amazed at how much stuff is in there. So
I will get a screwdriver and check it out. I appreciate your help.
Hey, good luck with that, Steve, and if we solved all your problems, you give us a call back and let us know.
Will do. Thank you.
All right, thanks. The dust bunnies of the world. It's more than just a cleanliness thing, I promise you. My wife's computer, it's in a place upstairs where it's sort of out, and it was getting to the point where it was, you'd walk in the house and you could hear the computer when you walked in the front door. And I thought, something's wrong here. And you know the old story of the plumber's house where the pipes are leaky, right? So I kept hearing this thing and just kept putting it off and putting it off. And she was gone for a couple of days a few weeks ago. She took the kids and went out of town. And so I decided, you know, I'm going to take that machine and I'm going to open it up and I'm going to just see. And when I opened it up, it was a little dirty inside, but I didn't think it was that bad. But I decided to go and blow it out anyway. And that's all that it required to make that machine go from this loud, noisy thing that you heard as soon as you walked in the door to this really quiet thing. And the reason it was getting so loud is the fans were just spinning faster and faster. A lot of fans these days are sort of sensitive to the temperature inside the machine. And so the warmer things get, the faster they spin. And this thing was just out of control. It was at top speed trying to cool things down. And as soon as I went in there with a little bit of compressed air and blew out all the various heat sinks and things, which I'm usually pretty good about, but obviously had let go for too long here, It's amazing. The machine was completely silent 5 minutes later, all because of a dust buildup. So if you think it's just about keeping things clean, it's about keeping things running quietly or running efficiently. And if you're having all kinds of weird spontaneous reboot problems, then check to make sure you don't have heat buildup issues, because that can solve a lot of problems really quickly. Let's see if we can jump back in the phones, or back on the phones, or back to the phones, whatever the case might be. There's more people to be helped, and it's Isaac up next on the computer corner. Isaac, welcome.
Hey, how you doing? I have a Combat Presario. I'm rocking XP Home.
You're rocking XP Home, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm one of those computer kids, you know.
Do you listen to Gatos during the week? Because that's how he rolls, and he talks about rocking things?
Hey, you know, that's all speculation. I'm not even going there.
All right.
But anyways, I figured you guys would be able to help me. My main machine took a crap on me. The processor fried. And I got a loaner, this Presario. I'm trying to hook it up to my wireless network. And every time I try to install the adapter program, it locks up the operating system.
Okay, so you've got this wireless adapter. You're trying to plug in. You stick in the disc for this wireless adapter, and things just lock up on you. Are you sure that the disc has the correct drivers and stuff made for Windows XP, or is it possible that it's older stuff?
Actually, I checked into that by going to the Netgear site, because I have a Netgear. The router and the adapter are both Netgear. So I went to their site and checked it out, and even downloaded a couple updates. And no, every time I try to install any kind of driver for my WPNT-121, it locks up XP Home.
So is this thing plug in through USB, or how does it interface with the computer?
It's USB.
Okay, so do you have anything else that plugs in through USB on this machine?
I got a mouse, and that's it.
Because it's possible that there's some problem with USB, either the drivers or the hardware on the machine, and that may be causing the issue. I've seen that before, where there's something damaged with the actual USB ports, whether it be hardware or software. And sometimes when you start to get into a little bit more advanced devices, and mice are pretty generic in terms of really what they require from a resource standpoint. So you might also check at the Compaq website, make sure you have the latest drivers and things available for USB drivers, or what they might call chipset drivers. And those are sort of generic drivers for all the different input and output parts of the computer.
All right.
So check to make sure that those are updated. Also, if you're trying front USB ports, try the rear ones or vice versa. So try a little bit, try some other place. So if it's a hardware issue, we're using different USB ports, which may or may not change your results as well.
All right. Makes sense. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck with those things. And give us a shout back if it starts rocking for you.
All right.
Thanks for the call, Isaac. Did he say he was rocking Windows XP? He said he was rocking Windows XP. I think that means running Windows XP in our world, right? I think so. If you are interested in some of the resources we have posted for you about Wi-Fi and some of the latest technologies and some of the history of Wi-Fi, things you can do to increase speed of your wireless network connection, things you can do to increase range, meaning the distance you can go from the base port or access point, things you can do to secure your wireless access point. If you're looking at buying new wireless equipment, what you ought to be looking at. We've got all kinds of resources posted for you right now, datadoctors.com. You click on the radio show section and you'll see those resources there, and they'll be there archived away. You can go back in time and look at previous shows for at least the last 4 or 5 years. We keep the audio archives there. We have Geek Speak of the Week. So we have all kinds of resources for you. And we have links there to ask questions and make suggestions. We're going to talk about one of those people that asked a question or made a suggestion in just a second here when we come back from this next break. But before we do that, I think it's time again for a check of traffic and weather. And for that, once again, it's none other than John Dormy in the KTR Traffic Center, who's got the latest. John. Welcome back to the final segment on the Computer Corner. If you missed any part of the show, we've got it captured for you in so many ways it hurts. Datadoctors.com/radio. You'll find the resources, the links to all things Wi-Fi related, wireless technology for your home, for your business, for your your condo, your castle, whatever the case might be. We've got all kinds of information posted there for you. Shortly into next week, we'll have the audio archive of this show posted up for you. We've also got, as we mentioned, previous shows. You can go way, way back in time. Of course, while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter, and you'll get a preview of each and every show, generally sent out on either Thursday nights or Friday sometime in the morning. That newsletter also comes full of sort of news around the world that applies to most people in their technology world. Has tips, a preview of our Geek Speak of the Week, a preview of the syndicated newspaper column that's published every Monday in here locally in the Business Journal, in the East Valley Tribune also. So you can check all those things out. Again, datadoctors.com/radio. That's the home of the Computer Corner, so you can check that out anytime. Let's jump back on the phones and see if we can help a few more people out before they kick us out here of the studio. And up next, it's Bruce. Bruce, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
I don't know if you've addressed this question before, but in the last few days, I bought a personal home computer with Windows Vista. Not very happy with the program so far, but I'm trying to work with it. I'm having some problems with... if you're familiar with the startup button, and I click on the startup button, and when the panel comes up with the pop-up, the shortcut area where you go to the area, for example, the buttons for the documents area and the control panel, when I click on that area and I try to go into the area to pull that up, what happens is the screen flashes up for, you know, a half a second and then closes. And I have not, from the beginning, been able to get into that area. I've tried online help. Their solution from Windows is maybe perhaps I have a corrupted file or a corrupted version of Windows Vista, but I think there's something else wrong, or maybe I'm doing something wrong.
Well, part of what it may be is that the way the interface works has changed a little bit, and so it may be a little bit confusing, and you may be clicking when it's not expecting you to click or something along those lines.
Yeah, the only area that I can get into is recent documents, and I noticed that it has a white arrow in that area. I can get into recent documents, but that's been the only area.
Well, something that might help ease the transition to a new operating system, and I suggest this to people sometimes if they're having troubles, to find out if, A, this is a navigational issue and it's just you adjusting to the interface, or if it's a problem with the machine. If you right-click on that start button instead of left-clicking on it like normal,
yes,
and choose Properties...
Mm-hmm.
It should give you some options to put Windows into what they call like a classic mode.
Okay.
Which will make things look and feel a lot more like you're used to with older versions of Windows, like Windows XP and predecessors.
Great.
And so if you do that, that may change some of the behaviors as far as the way things are working.
Okay.
And if it is an issue with a new interface that you're just not used to yet, that's going to start to make it look and feel and work a lot more like what you are used to. And bypass some of those problems. Now, if you still have the same issues after you've done that, then we're clearly not dealing with something where it's just Windows Vista and you're not used to it yet. Instead, we're dealing with a potential problem with the machine, and it's time to get with whoever you bought it from to find out what your various forms of resolution might be. So you can get with, if you bought it from a retailer, you can go back to them. If it's from a major manufacturer and you did mail order, you'll have to call them, whatever the case might be. I can tell you that Windows Vista has been having some serious, what Microsoft calls, adoption issues. And it's not selling the way they had hoped and expected. There's some interesting things that are happening now. Microsoft, when they sell an operating system, when you buy an operating system on a computer, we can sell you an operating system in a couple of different ways. And right now, what's very, very popular, a lot of the manufacturers are taking advantage of something that's little known called downgrade rights. And with that, they can sell you, for example, Windows Vista Business, but preload on the PC XP Professional.
Yes.
And Microsoft gets to count that as a Vista sale, even though what actually was delivered on the desktop was XP, and it's perfectly legal within the licensing rights. And so it's an interesting thing, and it's hard to then gauge what the real adoption rate and rate of people sort of taking Windows Vista is, but it's certainly a lot lower, and it's taking a lot longer for people to jump on board. So you're not alone in expressing a little bit of frustration with the new operating system and some of the things that are happening.
I'm at the point now. I was getting ready to say I'm ready to go back to Windows XP. I'm still having to keep my old computer on standby and go back to it for things and start it up and work with it because of the issues I'm having with the new computer.
Yeah, so one of the things I'll warn you about is the hardware may or may not, if you bought that computer, it may or may not take having Windows XP on it. And so if there is some kind of return period and you're within that, you might want to strongly make that consideration and make that switch before that time period is up. Because people are also finding out that they struggle with it for a while, find out that they can't make Vista work for them, and they decide they want XP on the same box. And in some cases, that just can't be done because the hardware wasn't designed to work that way.
Okay.
So there are a number of places out there. We get this request all the time. We probably still sell at least 3/4 of the machines we sell in our stores around the country are still Windows XP versus Vista. So it's definitely something that consumers are looking for, and as long as there's a demand out there, there will be lots of places like us providing those kinds of machines. And there's others out there that provide XP as well. So if that's something that you're just not comfortable with what's happening or your programs aren't working, whatever the case might be, there are alternatives out there.
Okay, thank
okay.
you.
Good luck with that, Bruce. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks for your time. Have a great day.
You bet. You too. That wraps up another 2 hours of Computer Corner. We hope you join us next time right here on FM News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Until then, we've got lots of resources, again, posted for you at datadoctors.com. You can subscribe to the newsletter. You can check out all the past links. Until next time, if you don't need it, don't install it. We'll see you next week.